as Mickey Kouse argues, in the end of equality, the liberal response to every setback could be summarized in one word: more. When welfare seemed to cause fathers to abandon their families, liberals responded that payments should be extended to families where the father remains at home. But this in turn encouraged recipients to stay or become unemployed. The answer to that? Give money to employed poor fathers too. But this in turn created an incentive for families to split up the moment the father moved out of poverty so they wouldn't lose their benefits. Meanwhile, if you criticized any of this, you were a fascist. The unintended but inevitable consequences of liberal utopianism spilled forth. From 1964 onward, crime in America grew at about 20% per year. Liberal court rulings, particularly the Supreme Court's Miranda decision, caused clearance rates to plummet in major cities. Welfare had the tendency to encourage family breakdown, illegitimate births, and other pathologies it was designed to cure. The original Civil Rights Revolution, which was largely based on a classically liberal conception of equality before the law, failed to produce the level of integration liberals had hoped for. In 1964, Hubert Humphrey, Mr. Liberal, swore up and down in the well of the Senate that the Civil Rights Act could in no way lead to quotas, and if anyone could prove otherwise, I will start eating the pages one after the other because it is not there. By 1972, the Democratic Party, under the guise of the McGovern rules, embraced hard quotas for blacks, women, and youth as its defining organizational principle. And it should be no surprise that a Democratic Party determined to do anything it could to make itself look like America would in turn be committed to making America look like the Democratic Party. And if you criticized any of this, you also were a fascist. Indeed, even as quintessentially fascist street violence erupted in American cities, white liberals responded by basking in guilt and blaming the right. The Watts riots in 1965 were the real turning point. Not only was the collective liberal intelligentsia determined to blame white America, the system, for the violence, but the violence itself became morally admirable rebellion. Johnson commented that such behavior was to be expected when people don't feel they get a fair shake. Hubert Humphrey said that if he'd been born poor, he might have rioted also. An entire riot ideology unfolded that, in the words of urban historian Fred Siegel, became a new form of collective bargaining. Destroy your neighborhood and the government will buy you a better one. The extent of liberal denial was put on full display when Daniel Patrick Moynihan, then an advisor to Richard Nixon, advocated a policy of benign neglect on racial issues. The subject of race, Moynihan had told Nixon in confidence, has been too much talked about. We may need a period in which Negro progress continues and racial rhetoric fades.